Okay, so welcome everyone to this discussion, which will be today about orbital physics. Actually, I am first time on this type of discussion, so I don't feel so well what was the standard way to proceed. But what I thought about, there are actually several people in the audience who really worked or work on orbital physics. So maybe I thought that I will make a kind of introduction and listing some of the topics which in my opinion are interesting, maybe open, maybe controversial, and then maybe just to, not to ask but to push some of you to volunteer. And then just to say some of the things. I already spoke with maybe three, four people just about their possible contribution on some of the topics. Okay, but once again, actually, my list, of course, is definitely not complete. So first of all, if you would like to add something to the list of topics and to discuss, you are welcome. I will appreciate it. And also, if you think that some of the topics are maybe not so exciting, not so interesting, okay, just feel free to tell it. I won't be offended at all. Okay, good. Now, orbital physics. That's just a starting point is we have T to G, five orbitals which are split into threefold orbitals T to G and twofold orbitals AG. That's probably I don't have to explain it here. And then in normal situations, at least if we have kind of high spin state, we fill the states one after the other. Say one electron goes here, second here, third here, fourth here. And we may have situations when, say, either these threefold degenerate states have not completely filled shell, but partially filled shell, or maybe one of these EG electrons have partially filled shells. That's actually what we call a system with orbital degeneracy, or with corresponding Cantellar effect, once again. And then in concentrated system, well, it doesn't matter, actually, I can take another seat. Just take a seat here, and then I will just sit somewhere in the closer to this one.
So this was yours.
No problem. No, it doesn't matter. There are many seats here. Man. Okay. Then maybe, as I said, I just want to list some of the questions which may be worth discussing. And I just will just one by one. Number one. Consider, say, isolated impurity like that. And we know that if I'm dealing with, say, typical situation, oxygen octahedra, and my transition metal is somewhere in the middle. And suppose I just strong Cantellar effect and strong orbital ordering is when I have partially filled EG orbitals. And that's actually what was discussed in most of the things about orbital loading. But lately, actually, even more interesting things happened with partially filled T2G orbitals. And I come to this point later. And what is the difference and why this may be even more interesting in some sense. But first, maybe about EG orbitals. EG orbitals may be splitted if I distort this regular octahedra. And they are split by two types of distortions. One of them, what is called Q3, that's actually tetragonal distortions. And to conserve volume, I move this one in. Or maybe it's Q3 bigger than zero, for instance, or Q3 less than zero, that's actually will be not elongation, but tetragonal contraction of octahedra. So this guy go like this, and this go like this. But there is another type of distortion which also splits these orbitals. That's actually what people call Q2. That gives you not tetragonal but atrobic distortion. And Q2 will be the following distortion. Well, interrupt me any moment. Any question? Any?
Are we splitting the two EG orbitals or not?
Yeah, this tetragonal distortion will split EG, will also split T2G. There are other type of distortions which only split T to G. I will come to this.
Where does the name come from? Why Q2, Q3?
Well, I don't know. Simply, just traditionally. I know one of the first paper by Kanamori probably, and he used these notations. There are simply two degenerate distortions. See, actually, if you use group symmetry arguments, then actually this EG, that G is Gerade and E is doublet. So you simply classify. You classify the degenerate state by symmetry, and you see that that actually will be this symmetry for cubic octahedra, with cubic symmetry, that will be EG symmetry electronic state. And interesting and important is that also vibration you also of course classify by the same symmetry, and there is also doubly degenerate vibrations, and that's actually called E. It's electronic, and E, usually people use capital letter for corresponding vibration. That's actually what in problem of local Jahn-Teller, Jahn-Teller for impurities or Jahn-Teller for, say, molecules, people call EE problem. Doubly degenerate electron, coupling to doubly degenerate, to the same doubly degenerate phonons. The doubly degenerate phonons are the one which I have shown you. Q3, one of them is like this, another is like this. I keep this atom constant and move this out, this in. So this give you tetragonal distortion, tetragonal compression, or tetragonal elongation. This give you orthorhombic, also splitting, the same splitting. And interesting point is that if you consider actually only one type of distortion, then it's famous Jahn-Teller story, energy as a function of distortion, or if you like, say, Q3, for instance. Then it will, doubly degenerate levels will go like this. So for one distortion, one orbital goes below, for the other distortion, opposite distortion. For elongation, say, z square goes below, that will be z square, and this will be, say, z square orbital, this will be x square minus y square. For elongation, z square is stabilized, x square minus y square is upper in energy. For contraction, x square minus y square is stabilized. But we have quantum mechanics, actually, and if I just make this system in this state, then equivalent energy is also here, and there may be possible tunneling between these two different minima, and which will give you something kind of system fluctuates all the time between, if it's only isolated center, it fluctuates between elongated and contracted, doesn't know what to prefer. If it's a quadratic Hamiltonian, it's
even worse.
Huh?
It's even worse because
I will come in a minute. It's worse. Of course, it's much worse. Sorry, but it would simply imply that in fact it won't be distorted. It won't be distorted. But the function will be different. That's actually what people call Lebrunic wave function. And for say two different electronic wave function. Each electronic wave function will have its own nuclear, and psi 2 will have phi 2. And so if you consider, for instance, non-diagonal matrix elements, some operator 1, 2, then it will give you, say, for instance, electronic operator, psi 1 a psi 2 times product of phi 1 phi 2. That's actually these distortions, different distortions, and this is product, of course, is less than zero, and that's actually simply strongly reduce non-diagonal matrix elements. That's actually the same as polyronic band narrowing, if you like, but in this field it's called Hem reduction factor. That was, in fact, actually, in the beginning of this story, when people spoke about Jahn-Teller and started to study it, realized that there should be this instability, there should be distortion, started to look at electron spin resonance of isolated impurities, and were surprised. Well, we expect this anisotropic G factor, and we see everything isotropic. Where is distortion? It's gone. And then realize that actually it's because of this quantum nature, but what happens indeed, that's actually strong suppression of this non-diagonal matrix element, so that's like this. Now, it's worse, of course, that's what Maxim already had in mind, that's what I started to hint at, because it's not only one type of vibration which gives the distortion, but it's also another type, so it can also, so I can write, see here, for instance, Q2. And then finally, I have kind of also distortion, And finally, system may choose either Q3 distortion of any sign or Q2 distortion or any linear combination.
Because the coupling can be written in terms of Q3, Q3,
Q2, Q2. Yeah. 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 And then actually it gives rise to the situation when your surface, energy surface, is like this. And minima is actually here, the whole true actually at the bottom. So system actually not only fluctuates from one potential value to the other, but actually it's rotate. And if it's only quadratic Hamiltonian, it's rotate freely. It's very strong quantum fluctuations. And again, rotation should be treated quantum mechanically. So you have to quantize it. You have rotational quantum numbers, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. What are the timescales for these fluctuations?
No, that's actually pretty fast fluctuations. I don't remember exactly. It should depend on the properties of, well, it depends on this numbers essentially. Okay, what is the curvature of these things and what is radius of this curve? I don't really know exactly, but it should be of order of say like typical Fonon time scales, because actually it requires also a redistribution of lattice. So typical Fonon time scales.
There is all
the things over here. Yeah, that's a different thing, actually. In reality, that's as I said. I just was careful enough. I said if I only keep quadratic terms. But if I go beyond quadratic terms in Hamiltonian, I consider some anisotropy, I consider cubic terms, they give rise. Then I can just draw here, say, for instance, describe everything by angle theta in this plane, or I can just redraw it maybe like this. Q3. Q2 and this minimum of potential energy, this true, that's actually I use maybe same color. That's actually this curve with the same fixed radius, but system can be at any point in this circle, and that actually can be determined by angle theta. Angle theta. And in fact, actually, if I go beyond simplest approximation, then I also have in my energy terms which are proportional to, crudely speaking, cosine 3t. And they will make some warping of this surface. So for instance, this place will have minima. Say this place will have minima, this will have minima. For instance, 2 pi over 3, actually, this one, or this one, or this one. So suppose that this is elongation, Q3 elongation. But if I consider, say, a regular octahedra, then who told me that it should be elongated along that direction? It may be elongation along x and along y. At least this this unharmonicity prefers elongation instead of contraction. But elongation, again, can be threefold, x, y, and z. That's actually reflected on this diagram by the fact that you have, say, 2 pi over 3 symmetry, threefold symmetry in this phase space. So minima is here, here, and here. Here, for instance, it's z square elongation. The elongation here is x elongation, here is y elongation. Or corresponding orbital, here it will be z square orbital, like this. Here it will be x square orbital, the same, but along x direction, and here it will be y square orbital. So I can describe everything in this language. Now, that's what I also just very shortly mentioned in. It is my concluding kind of speech after the conference, that people, that's actually a pretty big field, this Jahn-Teller physics for isolated system molecules. And it's quite a big community. And they are mostly working on all these quantum effects, tunneling, not tunneling, that's including the harmonicity, and this matrix element, that matrix element, and so on and so forth. And writing using all this vibrational quantization. By the way, it's interesting also that this vibrational quantization also gives rise to the geometric phase, like Berry phase. And in fact, Berry phase was first suggested just in this context by Longit Higgins. I think it was something like 50 something. I just forgot. It first appeared actually in the context of Jahn-Teller, before all the other realization of Berry or the geometric phases.
So what's the expression for the Berry phase?
I don't know, actually. I can't. I didn't really do work on this myself. So maybe someone can do it, actually. Who can?
Yeah, I cannot. But the point is that, you know, when you go in one circle, if you you think that I just can adiabatically follow here, then this gives rise to the.
But the expression I simply don't remember.
Like
her.
No.
That's actually.
Analogy, but I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
Daniel, you seem to suggest that there's a zero point energy associated with the wave function being symmetric in the three wells or even in the Mexican heaven. And that might be some.
That is actually a question.
Reason to have disordering.
That is actually one question. How relevant is all this story for concentrated system? When we go to concentrated system, we always, our community at least, we always forget about it.
For the good reason, the phonons are not local, yeah?
Yeah, there are many reasons, of course, that's, phonons are classical. No, not classical, but slow, phonons are not local, and there is coupling.
Not even that, but because, I mean, the phonons are three-dimensional. Yeah, so they
yeah but that's actually exactly right, but that actually gives a coupling between states. If I just, if for instance, I just make this elongation here, for instance, making this orbital here, then actually there will be coupling to this side, so they cannot fluctuate separately because they are coupled. But once again, that's actually this coupling gives rise to this final orbital ordering or cooperative Antlerer effect. But that's kind of broken symmetry, fine, but still maybe for some physical effects, maybe this internal possibility of quantum fluctuation may be relevant. I simply don't know such effect myself. But
you argue that actually it is relevant, but H bar is so small and the mass is so high that in fact, in practice, you don't see it. If H bar would be much, much bigger, would definitely happen. In practice, it just distorts.
Yeah, in practice it distorts statically, but in a sense, if you like, actually, that's a situation similar to ordinary magnetic systems. Isolated spins actually is kind of a quantum object, but if you use mean field approximation, then you are fine. You are in business, and you have this long range order and broken symmetry, and same here. But here maybe by better reason because it's actually involved lattice, which is slow, really heavy and slow.
Question: is there a gap in the spectrum?
Gap in the spectrum of what? Which spectrum?
The gap is going to be basically local. I mean, the
gap in which spectrum?
Well, that would be the Q2, Q3, the distortion modes spectrum. So the ground state is degenerate.
No, the phonons remain phonons.
And we have shown that
there will be no gap in the phonon spectrum, that's for sure.
But you can show that the graph in the concentrated system, that the ground state has a continuous symmetry, as a U1 symmetry, the ground state, but not the Hamiltonian. If you have just a New York neighbor coupling of the Q2s and Q3s.
No, but first of all, there are isotopes, second, there are other neighbors, so there is never continuous.
There's a discrete image, there's no spin system that does not have a gap because there's always spin orbit coupling, right? So, I mean, on the level that Daniel is discussing now, nearest neighbor interactions on a cubic lattice, you can show that, say, the classical ground state is degenerate.
No, there is actually one important. There is one important.
How large the anisotropy is? I don't know.
Well, for spins we always have SU2, but for orbitals actually pairwise interactions they are not necessarily, but typically not really. Tau to tau or isospin to isospins, but rather anisotropic. It might be tau z, tau z, maybe some other anisotropy, more complicated anisotropy. So in principle, actually, so for pair, this spectrum would maybe easily get.
Well, the thing is, if you write down this model, nearest neighbor interaction of Q2 and Q3 modes on a cubic lattice, and you look at the classical ground state, there's a continuous rotation.
It's an artifact of mean field approximation.
No. Exact symmetry.
Yeah.
What would mean?
Mean field. Classical means mean field. In mean field, you get this. But of course, if you include fluctuation, it immediately disappears.
Yeah. if you add things, then does the Hamiltonian have the symmetry or not?
No, that's not.
Well, which Hamiltonian? I don't know, the ones with the nearest neighbor.
Hamiltonian does not have rotational symmetry.
The Hamiltonian does not have rotational symmetry, but the ground state does.
No, this kind of compass model, this. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. That's good. Very good. Go ahead.
So you can call this thing, for instance, this guy, you can call, say, Q, let's call it QC, and this vector QB.
1, 2, 3, okay.
And this is, okay, QA. And if you put these things on a lattice like here, then your Hamiltonian is going to be Q, let's say, where I would put it, maybe QA, I, Q, A, and I plus A. Meaning actually that if you look along the for instance the z-axis, you have this elongation in this direction, which we call the QC. And this QC only couples to a QC in the side above it, which makes it actually an
anti. It's kind of Ising interaction, but different Ising variable for different orientations, so for different bonds.
Yeah. So it's you have only one angle, so it's
yeah.
The XY model.
Easier example would be a symmetric example which I call compass model long ago. That's a kind of model like this. Say, for instance, I have SX, SX, IJ, for pair IJ parallel to X. That's not a history, but plus SY, SY for pair parallel to Y, plus SZ, SZ for pair parallel to Z. So each pair is Ising. So it doesn't have this SUC symmetry. And usually I can rotate a normal state of Heisenberg model, I can rotate spin space. And this XYZ in spins has nothing to do with XYZ in real axis, actually. It's completely different spaces. And here I rotate, say, spin space, and I can simultaneously rotate real space XYZ. So that's kind of a strange situation, strange symmetry. Formally speaking, there should be no Goldstone theorem. But in fact, actually, in this model, ground state is extremely complicated. I don't really know.
This is very complicated. So actually, look at the.
I don't really know what is actually ground state and whether it orders or not. Cubic system. Each pair interaction is Ising, and I don't know whether it's ordered or not. It's in three-dimensional degeneracy, two-dimensional degeneracy. Ground state is extremely degenerate, and I don't know really whether it's ordered or not.
Yeah. Actually, the most is an interesting fact is that the two-dimensional system actually maps on this torus and code models of Kitaya. Did you know that?
But it doesn't have continuous degeneracy. It has,
not exactly.
But you're on a cubic lattice. Now, if I take this on the cubic lattice in two dimensions, it maps on the toric code square lattice dimension.
No, there is a better realization of Kitaev model. There is a better. T2G orbitals on honeycomb lattice, that's actually exactly Kitaev. Not exactly, sorry, again, not exactly, because it's not spin 1/2, but spin 1 effectively, but very similar.
Yeah, okay, there are two Kitaev-like models. Okay, one is this guy, that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
On the honeycomb lattice. Mm-hmm. And I forgot what it's normally called, what people call it. The other one is this torrent compass. Okay. And the other one is this torrent code where you have four spins interacting on plaquettes and a transversal field. Right? And you can show that one maps.
This one I simply don't know.
How many global symmetries does this model have? How many, when you have, on the cubic lattice, I'm just interested. How many global symmetries does this model have?
You gave me any state, yeah? For instance,
state like this, or and then the next size, whatever. Now, the two dimensions. Now I take this state, I wrote that I reflect, take one line here and do a reflection like this, and then I have a state with the same energy.
But that's again, that's a symmetry of the ground state model.
Well, let me ask, how many discrete symmetries does this Hamilton have? Global discrete symmetries, maybe that.
Yeah, I think there are lots of global symmetries, discrete symmetries, right? It's a symmetry generated by SX, which changes, let's say.
For two dimensions.
Even for 3D, so SX changes, you know, SY and SZ.
You have to change two, right?
So you change the sign of SY and SZ. Now, I guess you do it in a plane which is perpendicular to the x-axis. So you don't have to reflect all the spins, just all those in one YZ plane, because the interactions along X they only involve SX. So.
It's a pity Aronia left already,
so
because they did actually exactly
something
that.
Something linear in the size L of 3L, 3
yeah. Yeah, that's actually you can reflect actually when in cubic lattice even you can just take one plane and rotate it, or you can in each plane you can take one line and rotate it, and actually a lot of these things you can.
Discrete degeneracy, which
yeah, huge.
So the problem is that discrete symmetry.
Yeah,
the problem is I think
huge.
So it is dual to this say more interesting model for. One computation or whatever, but the problem is that here you can write, it's not protected, so you can write down some field or make this a J1 and this a J2, and these are local operators, and they destroy the symmetry. So if your J1 or J2 is just a little bit off, then you're out of the
discrete symmetries.
But this model has no relation to orbitals.
No, this one has direct relevance,
yeah.
And model similar to this one has a relevance to this state. But it's not spin 1/2.
You can rotate the planes.
Classic.
That's a good one. Yeah.
The bottom one has actual symmetries, which the one has.
I have to think about the quantum.
As written, you haven't written a quantum Hamiltonian, actually.
No.
No, but this is something similar to quantum version of three-state Potts model, actually.
That's the XY component.
No, but that's actually like three-state Potts model, when you have this state. But it can be a quantum version of three-state Potts model.
So if you would write
some
quantum, then you would, for instance, say, in spin, this would be S, let's say S, Z plus, and then you have a quarter I.
Okay. It's better to.
And here you have S X plus square root of 3.
Here it's better to really introduce say T1, T2, T3, and then there is some relation because they are not linear independent. T1, T1 along 1, T1, T2, and T1 is TZ, T2 is rotated by 2 pi over 3.
It's got the obvious one player, maybe.
What's that?
It's not good. So the connection is that you would say QA maps on a SZ, QB maps on this guy rotated by 120 degrees.
Okay.
So this 2 pi over 3 rotated, which is SX plus SZ, square root of 3 here, and let's put it.
So.
Yeah. It's strength QC on minus 2 pi over 3.
Okay. So then how many global discrete symmetries does that model have?
Yeah, good question. I thought it was the same as the, as this guy, but I'm not sure. I have to think about it, but I thought it was the same. So in this guy, you can take, you have now planes, and you can rotate those planes by 2 pi over 3, and that's the symmetry of the Hamilton, of the classical energy ground state.
Yeah.
That's more complicated.
I don't know.
With these spin operators,
Yeah, and the interesting thing is,
if it is this one, then spin 1/2.
Yeah. So if you take this,
if you do something for this one, then you have to work with effective spin 1. And that even will be closer to this one, to this system, and in that sense it may be closer to this honeycomb Kitaev business and so on. But spin 1 and not spin 1/2.
So that's the difference. Actually, this, you can ask how physical is this model, so the spin 1/2 one. And that's actually very physical. If you take the Fugal-Chomsky model for super exchange or for these EG orbitals, so, and then you look at the magnetic sector and you freeze all the spins. So you make the spins ferromagnetic, for instance, just freeze out all the spin variables. And you have an orbital model, and you have two orbitals here, which is your spin variable. And then this orbital model is exactly this.
Yeah.
And this has like quantum order from the Dory.
Yeah, but that's why we just at that time suggested this kind of analogy. Like, exactly how we became to this.
Because you thought that would be simpler.
Yeah, well.
Which is the one that actually would come up?
Realistic one is this one. Realistic one is this one.
Well, it's also not very realistic because lattice interactions are not in your neighbors, right?
So, well, yeah, but.
They are long range.
So those break down all these
variables. So they don't remember about the crystal lattice and stuff like
that. Let's see what would be the first reasonable addition in symmetry breaking. I would say, I mean, these oxygens are moving between two octahedra, right? So that's a pretty local interaction to start with.
No, that's not right. Actually, because that's actually a strain field finally. And then, for instance, suppose I consider square, this terms only include this interaction, but don't include this one. And then, in fact, you do obtain also this interaction and also their direction dependence and so on.
Yeah, but
so you simply consider elastic problem.
They don't break that symmetry.
But it will be long range. They don't break the symmetry. They don't break the symmetry, but they will be long range and they will couple also these states and so on. So.
The spurious continuous symmetry they might break because of long range.
Yeah, because they are, you know, tied to lattice and symmetry.
Yeah. But the
discrete
symmetry. I think one of the things that you also have is the tilting of the octahedra. So actually, all these guys also.
Well, that's too complex.
That would be definitely a reason why.
Right, but that's actually already some.
See, for instance, you can show that there's order from disorder transitions in this model, and that transition would spin.
Classical.
Classically, just thermal order, but
So telephase transition at 800 Kelvin, where the spins are completely disordered, where there's only the lattice, high temperature, probably classic. Because of the reasons that Maxime mentioned. So you can say, okay, there's an 800 Kelvin Young Taylor transition. It's described by this order from this order model. And I would say, well, not really, because you have this tilting of the octahedra that comes in.
No, I would rather say that it's largely stabilized by longer range interaction, by strains.
Can I ask a question of Max?
I think it's more important than order from disorder. Order from disorder is nice kind of theoretical. Game, but in real life, I think that longer range interactions are more relevant, more important.
I mean, with spin systems, one ignores spin orbit, then, you know, an SH2 spin symmetry, of course, and kind of J's, which are, you know, 300 Kelvin, something like that. And at least with spin and a half, then there's Jaworski Maria interactions, which can be pretty small. And so you can have, I don't know, a ratio of 100, maybe more, I don't know. What kind of ratio do you expect here between those terms that you're ignoring and those terms that you retain? Yeah. I mean, is it a factor of 3?
You can say, okay, if you look at the super this guy, the quantum guy, is a super exchange one, which is just on the scale of 100 Kelvin or so.
That's T square over U, effectively.
Yeah, T.
In simplest case. But plus effective electron interaction via lattice, which may be much different. That's actually what I wanted to discuss as one of the next points. What is relative relevance of these pure electronic effects like T square over U and electron lattice interaction? That's actually a very important point, but we're only discussing number 1 in my list, and that was number 3, I think. out of 9 or 10.
That's fine. Here in front of this is a large number.
Okay, so
like parts of electron holes or so.
Okay, so
that's a large number. So the corrections is, I don't know.
But that's, quite a bit of interest. If the corrections are down by 1/100, you know, then you've got a big energy range over which you have this model that affects your, you know, almost extensive number of symmetries.
There are ions that enthalpy is always less. Say copper is almost always, no matter what, along the tetrahedron.
Let's ask a precise question then. You have these symmetries here. Let's talk about only the discrete symmetries of that. And by, is it destroyed by the single ion-like thing here? No,
it's not.
When you only look at the higher order corrections of putting on that, they don't destroy symmetry. Then the long range of the interactions also does not destroy the symmetry. So we have to come up with something else that
long range one interactions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's the strain fields interacting with each other. Kugel wrote a paper about it. So here you have nearest neighbor interactions.
There's a longer range. Longer range interactions mediated by distortion, stress phonon.
So these are the quadrupole moments.
That's still the model onto that still respects the symmetry.
Yeah. These 2π/3 rotations. This discrete.
That's just cubic symmetry.
There might be the symmetry in each plane that you can.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I think so.
I can't imagine.
No, for long range, I don't think so.
No. But
isn't it more an empirical question? I mean, this thing at some level, you look at a material and where we think there should be this degeneracy and see if it stays cubic.
So you have platinum, MnO3, you have copper, fluoride, potassium copper fluoride, potassium chromium fluoride. These would have a younger transition.
No, but you're saying they do.
They definitely do have a high temperature cubic phase that goes to a lower temperature tetragonal phase, which is associated with the ordering of these young copper.
It still doesn't really answer the question. Temperature is higher than that.
That's the question. I mean, somehow, you could have a material which is just looks somewhat similar to this, but is always non-cubic. And then would you say that just it's a really, really high temperature order from disorder? No, you just say that it's materials. Physics detail.
Not here.
Sorry?
You just said it's not a non-cubic material.
It's a non-cubic material, yeah. So somehow this whole picture somehow presupposes that there's some range of energies above which it's good to talk about something with cubic symmetry and then...
And have these guys fluctuating.
So you would need a transition from cubic to cubic, but that's not happening in real life. It's cubic to tetragonal.
No, it doesn't have to be.
There's a question above 800 Kelvin. Do these, to what extent is it useful to think in terms of these degrees of freedom, which have now melted the orbital order, right? It's a question of in a magnet with a ferromagnet, to what extent is a local moment above nail temperature, right?
In this picture, I would then say that it's a question which was very hotly debated in this structural transition. Order from disorder or displacement transitions?
Yeah.
What are these?
Magnets, in a way you have an empirical probe of this question. If you look for a cubic
symmetry. In magnets you always have spins.
Yeah. Well, but you can tell whether you have spins because you can measure the Curie susceptibility, right? Is there some what would you measure to know that you have
local distortions? You have to measure local distortions, whether they are still present above cooperative transitions. PDF, exhaust, something like that.
You want to measure this?
Instantaneous picture. Whether close to one manganese, you have two long and one four short bonds or not.
That's what EXOS tells you. If you look at the system, even if it's cubic, high temperature, and you look at the local coordination of the manganese, it normally has two bond lengths, a long one and a short one, on average. But then,
I mean, the analog of magnetic stability would be probably some kind of compressibility.
Elastic moduli.
Yes.
Some of elastic moduli.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, so strain it and see how. Yeah,
exactly. From cubic to tetragonal.
Yeah, yeah. That's corresponding elastic moduli.
Is it softening up?
Yeah, yeah.
There, right. There are the longitudinal modes and the transversal modes. So the longitudinal mode, the just is distortion.
No, just corresponding modes, but for the lattice, not really local, but corresponding local distortion, but with periodic lattice. Yeah. Say C44 or whatever. Say C12, C11 minus. C12 or whatever, all these things, depending on the specific situation, of course.
But wouldn't it be the same for, say, for any cubic to tetragonal condition, not necessarily orbitally?
So why? This anomaly. If it is a displacement transition, then.
The critical region.
Yeah, but it's a question of whether, you know, as you whether the elastic softens up elastically at 801 degrees Kelvin, and then bam, it orbitally orders. Where it's such softening up at 900 Kelvin.
Yeah, so unfortunately, you know, in order to find, you know, Kiritale, you have to go to temperatures, say, much higher than the ordinary
exactly.
temperature. And here, you know, if you go to 300, you know, lose the higher it will melt.
There were some ferroelectrics where the PDF analysis shows that the transition is order disorder. So they're distorted at high temperature, but.
So what's
disorder.
PDF?
Sorry. Neutron pair distribution function. It gives you
that's kind of snapshot, instantaneous picture of different distances.
So the PDF tells you that above the Curie temperature, you're distorted, but the distortions are random, and below the Curie temperature, it was their order. But there's still a soft mode that you measure. So the phonon spectrum is...
But it doesn't soften all the way down to zero. It softens somewhat, and then stops, and then you have central peak instead.
So barium-titanate, I think, the softens in at the Curie temperature. So you have these two different measurements that are giving you completely contradictory pictures of this.
No, but the truth is somewhere in between, actually. You have both. But typically, in structural transition, from what I know, they soften, and then stop softening, and then you have...
What's...
I don't know, there's no magnetism.
No, so it's soft. So the phonon spectrum is suggesting that you're starting, that you're basically cubic going tetragonal,
right.
Whereas
right.
the local probe is suggesting you're always locally distorted.
Timescale question.
Yeah, so it could be just a timescale question.
Yeah. Well, I see, and just I wanted to mention this story more or less just in passing, but I see I touched the nerve. Actually, everyone is worried about this, or at least can say something about it. Actually, by the way, this model is again nice, but it will indeed look like that, like this 120 degree model. Only if I have really this warping of this minimal, this true, very strong, when I know indeed that I am sitting here or here or here. And there is also the problem of this tunneling between them. So there is kind of, all these states are not completely forbidden. But that's again a problem. Because if this minima here and here are very deep, and this maxima, somewhere here I have maxima. So my potential energy is something like here. Minima here, maximum here. Then again, minima here, maximum here. I don't know, I can't draw it here, actually.
It's cosine 3 theta.
Yeah, yeah, right. But if coefficient before this cosine 3 theta, let's call it G, for instance. If it's very large compared to everything, then I am reduced to this model. But even that is actually not guaranteed, generally speaking. And then I also have to worry about possibility of even single side, not just due to coupling and which is kind of has this strange symmetry. Coupling this strange symmetry, cubic symmetry kind of. But here even isolated side can just tunnel from this state to this state and so on. And how relevant is this, I simply don't know. That's always ignored in this kind of treatment of cooperative systems. Maybe it's indeed not relevant because of this longer range interaction and the phonons which have to be involved are heavy and lattices involved, so then it's maybe not really important. But it's kind of, I simply don't know. I wanted simply to raise this question as kind of to keep in mind. Could be that something.
To question, you know, because the central question on this field is whether orbitals are quantum or classical.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. That's why it's indeed.
They look so classical. Yeah. Are they ever quantum?
Yeah, but once again, actually, the problem is that people very often, when they consider this description, are using kind of this type of models, for instance, a mapping it to this effective isospin or pseudo spin, and so on. You can obtain these type of models in pure electronic models. To start with doubly degenerate Hubbard model, and you obtain this effective model instead of Heisenberg. You have coupled spin and pseudo spin model. And then spins we treat quantum mechanically have to. And pseudo spin written in this way looks like they're exactly the same quantum object. But the fact that they are coupled to the lattice strongly, that's actually maybe even just not mentioned in this model. And whether it really makes it generically classical or still there are some quantum effects. People usually treat these models. People simply write down some models, like say, for instance, okay, J1SS plus J2, say tau tau, maybe not necessarily Heisenberg, plus J3SS tau tau. Okay, that's actually a typical generic model. And then say, okay, fine. This we know that we have to treat quantum mechanically. Then why not treat this quantum mechanically? That's fine, but in this model we don't see that actually these guys are really describing these distortions and they are coupled to the lattice and quantum mechanics. So this object has also to involve the lattice. How relevant is it? Whether it kills completely all quantum effects in this story or not, I don't really know. Kaplik is strong, by the way. Kaplik is strong here, but much weaker for this one. And that's actually what Kelly Williams suggested.
Is there any convincing example? Because the coupling to the lattice is much weaker,
so you might have some quantum
factors. Yeah, coupling to the lattice is much weaker for this than for this. And that's actually what Stuttgart team, Ginyat, Haliulin mostly, they just made a big story out of that. And experimentally, Keimer.
Is there one example where we are all convinced that there are quantum orbital fluctuations?
That's precisely the question.
That's the question.
I asked Takura after, you know, his orbital program was, run for several years, and he told that there is none.
I don't know of any, although if you ask Keimer or Haliulin, they probably will tell you different story.
Orbital liquid just explains.
Yeah, but I simply do not know any real system which is really kind of without doubts, really this orbital kind of orbital liquid or orbital fluctuations are relevant and strong enough. Although they interpreted some of the data by using this picture, but whether it's unique interpretation, I don't know actually, because we propose the interpretation of the same data by using more traditional approach, and this is also okay.
Right, so Titan Aiken would say,
like this, yeah.
It's heavily discussed, so there's no consensus. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay. So exactly. Are there other examples? For instance, Ginyat also has this orbital piles system that's a validated.
Which one?
That's actually a rather special story. They saw in neutrons, first of all, that spin spectrum is completely isotropic. Whereas if you have this static orbital ordering, it should be rather strongly, at first glance, it might be anisotropic. Not necessarily should be, but might be anisotropic. And then they also see some feature in the spectra, spin wave spectra. Something like splitting of some modes, which they explain by this formation of orbital dimers, so to say, fluctuation dimers, like spin single state, but orbital single state, when orbitals are kind of fluctuating for a pair, something like this. You have. You have states like. In one moment, you have orbitals like this, for instance. Next moment, you have orbitals like, say, for instance, this. I simply just schematically. They are for T2G, but this stand of moving like this one, and then it moves, this oxygen moves like this. And fluctuating all the time between these two states, so you kind of have coherent superposition of these two states. But that's actually what they proposed, but I don't know whether it's really required and whether it's a unique interpretation of this experiments. I am not convinced, I would say. So I still kind of It would be extremely interesting, really, if it would be the case, but I don't know, really.
Daniel, have there been any studies done on molecular crystals? So in the molecular cluster limit, you certainly have the orbital fluctuations. And so if you just had a crystal of molecules where your interaction between the molecules would be weaker than in the kind of cooperative solid, one could imagine there would be some intermediate regime.
Well, usually, even if you have, say, for instance, not even necessarily molecular solid, but you take, for instance, you take some non-magnetic crystal and you put, say, copper impurity. Mm-hmm. Then it may distort. If it's isolated impurity, it doesn't because it fluctuates. But sometimes you have some pairs of impurity. Mm-hmm. And they already distorted. Mm-hmm. So it's already enough to have pair. And that's already kind of static, and you have G factor, which is G parallel, G perpendicular. You know whether the pair forms singlet or triplet, depending on what kind of orbital distortion. Suppose you have pair of magnetic Antelier impurity, pair of copper and zinc of something, okay, zinc oxide, and put, say, two coppers. If they are nearest neighbor, they can have orbitals like this. And then it will be anti-ferromagnetic interaction, it will be spin singlet. Or the orbitals may be like this, for instance. And then it will be ferrocoupling, it will be spin triplet. That you can easily see by ESR.
Right, sure.
Whether it's really ground state is spin singlet or spin triplet. I just don't remember exactly.
Did they do such experiments with T2G orbitals? So without the G?
With T2G, I'm not aware of any. Might be interesting. Probably might be interesting, really. Yeah. I know that ESR experiment for copper in non-magnetic, diluted copper in non-magnetic host. And they actually could conclude whether it's this or this by looking at spins, actually. Mm-hmm. Because spin state would be different. Spin singlet, zero, and here spin one, total spin.
Are they spinning the other way around?
Are they spinning the other way around? Yeah, that's actually a typical situation that if you have isospin anti-parallel, then spins are parallel. If isospins are parallel, spins are anti-parallel. That's very common rule, but not always, by the way. It's only the rule if you have what people 180 degree bonds, if oxygen is sitting here. If you have, that's actually yet another point in my big list of problems. If you have different local geometry, then it would be different. If you have, say, for instance, copper, oxygen, and another copper. Then this general rule that spins ferro, either spins anti-ferro or vice versa, it wouldn't work for this geometry. It would work for 180 bonds, metal, oxygen, metal, and this angle is 180 degree bond. That's easy. And if you have here metal, oxygen, metal, 90 degree bonds, be careful. All these standard rules don't work. Oh, there will be still some orbital ordering. That's actually what Maxim obtained with we had PRL. There will be pure. Maxim, yeah, like analogy of Casimir effect. Yeah, but there is some orbital ordering. Purely orbital and spins are decoupled and order much lower. Purely electronic model, by the way, not phonons. Okay, maybe just we can go on slightly, and I wanted to say also something about, well, once again, just bottom line, if there is any bottom line, as to these quantum effects, this quantum effect on level of isolated ion, and these strange quantum models, which are extremely frustrated even on cubic lattice or quadratic square lattice. But intrinsically, because of this orbital orientation, you have some strange frustration even in geometrical non-frustrated lattice. That's actually a very hot topic and interesting, really, theoretically, purely theoretically. Whether it's really relevant for quantum computation or not, that's not for me to judge, I don't know. I'm not an expert in that. But Jeroen is doing both, so ask him.
You sound like you're losing it. I don't know.
No. But in any case, I want to be... Let's go back to the Earth. Let's go back to the Earth, okay? To some more down-to-earth problems. Okay, these things, the splitting, T2G and EG, we already just mentioned a couple of times that they are different. In which respect are different? First of all, actually, coupling to the lattice is much stronger here than here. But another very important point is that here Orentville moment is quenched, effectively. That's actually state here are actually 0 and 2 plus minus 2. In terms of real L equal 2 state. And here actually these states is say plus minus 1 in terms of spherical harmonic and square root of 2, say 1.
2 to minus 2.
So either 2 minus 2. In any case, that's actually real spin orbit coupling. Real spin orbit coupling is not quenched and works here, generally speaking. That may give rise to many effects and give rise to significant difference of partially filled T to G and EG. Sometimes it's important, sometimes not. Typically, rule, by the way, rule of thumb, if you go for a periodic table, say titanium, vanadium, and say iron, cobalt, nickel, and so on, then spin orbit coupling is strongly changing, increasing from here to here. It's kind of like 20 MeV here.
Z to the power 4.
And it's maybe for cobalt, it's maybe 70. Looks like it's numerical, but it's relevant. It turns out to be relevant. And it turns out that actually for this titanium vanadium, usually we can ignore it, and we do. Although it's, I'm not sure whether it's really good, but usually we do.
Sorry? Do we forget about this?
Almost always, almost always. Although it's maybe not really completely right. That's the one point which I mentioned also during my talk. There is one funny thing. If I have T2G1 system, I have spin 1/2, and I have threefold degeneracy, which is effective, L effective is 1. But we know that G factor here is 2, and G factor of orbital is 1. And the total moment, real moment, will be, say, 2 times 1 minus, 2 times 1/2 minus 1 times 1, L minus S. Effective moment might be 0. Although L is non-zero, S non-zero, but G factor is 0. It's not because they are coupled to J 0. Because it's not, because orbital moment, it's 1 electron, so it's kind of still Cramer's ion. But simply it doesn't couple to external field. And that's actually known in ESR field, and as soon as you slightly distort this regular octahedra, then it immediately becomes non-zero G-factor. But a completely ideal regular octahedra is 0. And actually, I remember that quite a while ago we also spoke with Goodenough, and he mentioned also that he's also aware of the thing, and he said that, well, I was eager, I tried to find any material with this property, which would be non-zero L, non-zero S, and looked like non-magnetic. No such materials, unfortunately, but, well, who knows.
It's a question of how much is spin orbit coupling compared to the material or to the...
Distortion, simply distortion. There are some different type of distortions. But in any case, what I wanted to mention, that's actually, again, an old story, that in this system, suppose I have T to G and maybe only one electron, okay, fine. What will it do? If you look at Jahn Teller, it looks like it would split like this. One. But then again, orbital moment is quenched. It doesn't work. But it can do other things. It can do a split like this. It will be opposite type of distortions. Then I left with one electron in this state, which has orbital moment plus minus one. And then I use spin orbit coupling. It split it further on. This coupling splitting lambda. And then we see that actually in this system, Jahn Teller tendency would prefer this sequence of level and this distortion. Spin orbit coupling, if it's stronger, it will prefer this distortion. Opposite. So these two tendencies actually oppose one another, and looking at what happens experimentally, we can say whether Jahn Teller is better or this better. Actually, numerically, that's actually like this. The center of gravity of these levels is the same, So if I call it E Yanteller, this one, this will be 2 E Yanteller. And here again, it will be E Yanteller and 2 E Yanteller. So what is total energy here? Total energy here is minus 2 E Yanteller. What is total energy here? Is minus E Yanteller minus lambda. And which wheels, it depends on, I have to compare these guys. And if lambda is bigger than E Yanteller, this wins. And system evolves, develops along spin orbit rule, so to say, along spin orbit route. And that's actually what usually happens with cobalt and iron. Cobalt 2 plus, iron 2 plus. If Yanteller, if this is less than Yanteller, so I have to compare effectively this and this, or in other words, lambda bigger or smaller than E Yanteller. And they are comparable, generally speaking. And for cobalt 2 plus, for instance, these gains, for titanium, Yanteller gains. That's why for titanium we can more or less forget about spin orbit, but for cobalt we cannot.
But this cobalt cobalt Yanteller may not necessarily come from a single line, but can be, you know, a result of this
distortion. Well, if there is external distortion due to something else, that's fine. That's, then we don't have any problems. In some layered system or due to this tilt of octahedra or rhombic, there's often some initial splitting. Fine, but that I don't want to discuss this one. That's of course always present. So that's actually important point to keep in mind. And whether there may be some interesting effects again connected. Well, there are some interesting effects connected with that for cobalt 2 plus, iron 2 plus, what we discussed also with Sasha. There's some strange tendency actually. Ah, yeah, one more point, which differs actually with EGMT to G. Now, if I consider this octahedra, and suppose I just make a kind of Q out of it, yeah? Then EG are split by E distortion, by the double channel distortion. T to G are also can be split by the same distortion, EE. But they can also be split by trigonal distortions. Trigonal distortions, that's actually, I pull this along 1, 1, 1. This trigonal distortion for T to G is relevant. It also leads to splitting. But it doesn't split EG. So I have, say, what people call T problem. So for EG, I only have this problem. For T, I have to consider coupling both to E vibration and T vibration, or distortions. In real life, it might be relevant. How important for which system, that, of course, depends on the system. But for instance, in some spinels, that's what Yuki Matome just worked on, this vanadium spinels, and also rather Malenki. There is always some trigonal field, some trigonal splitting, and whether it's really crucial, important, or we can forget it, that may give it, determine some of the details of the behavior of these systems. Well, wait a minute, I have one question actually. What is standard schedule? When we are supposed to stop? That's what I suspect. Yeah, but that's the problem, because we just had very nice discussion and hot discussion, but it took, well, 70% of the time. Not maybe 90, not 100, but 70. Well, maybe then let's do the following thing. Maybe I just simply, without explaining what I mean, I simply list some of the topics, because, you know, that's actually, frankly speaking, I planned completely different thing. I wanted that people who are present here, I give the list, and then just people who are involved in some pro activity, they can say something about that. And it didn't work.
We should subsume Friday's discussion.
Okay, because it's really much more important really not to listen to to me, but rather to listen to people really did.
Maybe you put on the list.
Okay. Okay, list. So, okay. I may just simply draw this picture.
Okay, we're done.
That's clear what I have in mind. Second, EG versus T to G, say, lambda LS. Important, when it's important, and so on. Three, I had in mind, actually we already discussed a lot about the number three. I had orbital and frustration. And by this I had in mind more or less what this discussion which we had actually, that sometimes we have extra source of frustration due to the direction nature of orbital, even in non-frustrated lattices. So orbitals as a source of frustration, but another interesting point is also if I take real geometric frustration lattices, what orbitals are doing there? We usually spoke, usually people think only about, say, spins of frustrated lattices, but what orbitals in frustrated lattices are doing? Orbitals in frustrated lattices, really. So both ways, so to say. So orbitals due to frustration due to orbitals and orbitals in frustrated lattices. Now number four, that may be somewhat more specific, but in principle for real life, if you want to be realistic, actually it's important. Role of geometry. I mean just that, say, for instance, metal, oxygen, 180 degree. That's what people usually always start with theoretically. But in real life, very often they have, say, for instance, metal, like 90 degree. Or we may have something like phase sharing octahedra, like, say, for instance, typical for some of the low dimensional materials. I have metal, octahedra, and I have another metal here. That will be angle to this oxygen will be something strange, okay, whatever. How relevant is this local geometry? What are the consequences of this? Now, number five, maybe it should have been put even before that. Relative role. Importance of, say, electron lattice effect. That's real Jan Keller versus pure electronic. Super exchange effect. So this is actually what we did with Kugel, and I'm still not sure whether we really invented something useful or kind of a dominant mechanism in real electron lattice. That actually Sasha probably can say something about this story. Maybe. Because in real life, unfortunately, we cannot turn off the real electronic effects or electron lattice interaction, but in calculation, you can. We can fix the lattice and see whether you get something pure electronic or and so on. Now, what else? Number six, I made, say, reduce dimensionality. View to orbital. And that's actually, what Yuki Matoma probably can say something about that, whether it's, indeed in some cases system effectively becomes one-dimensional and so on. Now, in real life, again, even if I consider electronic mechanisms, also important direct DD overlaps or hoppings versus via oxygen. Say, for instance, for 90 degree bonds, we may have for 90 degree bonds if I have K2G orbital, they look like this. And there may be direct coupling, direct hopping, and effectively direct exchange or direct tendency to order, ignoring completely oxygen, or something will go via oxygen. And that's again crucial for some of the spin-offs. How relevant is one with respect to the other and for which system? And I hope that best structured people can probably clarify something for that. Very often in the models for the system, like for instance for spin-off, for triangular lattices, dealing with orbitals, we usually include only these hoppings. But for instance, for these famous cobaltates, sodium cobaltates, for cobalt probably that's not really good, and you have to include, even in triangular lattice of sodium cobaltates, you have to include this coupling via oxygen, and that's completely different physics, and very different topological kind of properties of this space. So how relevant is it, and which case? That's actually probably, as I said, band structure people may clarify something about this stuff. And then kind of maybe more specific one, orbital spin charge transfer insulator. But I don't think that we can come to this point. And maybe nine, I have these orbitals in insulator metal transition. Relevant, not relevant, system specific, what is the possible role, and do we have to worry about it at mode transition, and so on. So that's actually more or less my list, but please add something else.
Orbital liquid didn't make your list.
Well, orbital liquid, that's, well, in principle, fine. The quantum, quantum effect.
I don't know. It seems still controversial.
It's often a sign. Orbital liquid seems technically in
regime.
I
mean, there are some
materials. Well, I don't know if any. Well, maybe.
Orbital waves have been reported,
not to be observed. Well, fine, okay, very good. That's actually related to this question also. Orbitons. Well, by the way, speaking about orbitons, there is some misconception, actually, I would say. People usually think that it's something completely new and very exotic. It's not the case, actually. If you speak with inorganic people doing inorganic chemistry, they always measure something similar. They start to measure any new material by measuring this, because what is actually orbiton? That's, suppose I start with, maybe, splitted level, and orbiton is transition from here to here. Or from here to here. But that's actually nothing else but simple crystal field transition.
Yeah, but that's not an orbiton.
It is essentially this one plus dispersion.
No, it's dispersion.
Plus strong dispersion. If there is strong dispersion, we can speak about orbitons.
Right.
If there is weak dispersion, we simply are speaking about crystal field optical transitions. And that's actually, so whether there is indeed strong dispersion and in which cases, but it's, well, like in all excitons, there is always some dispersion. But in any case, kind of, if you speak about orbitons, don't think that you are kind of inventing something completely new.
Yes, Kalina will probably disagree, because in his picture there is no crystal field splitting, you know, to start with, yeah? So there are only, you know, quantum fluctuating orbitons, and still, you know, there are orbitons.
Well, if indeed you have something which is not split, if you have something like orbital liquid, then it's of course a different story, yeah, then you have. You can think of what stabilizes this orbital liquid and what kind of excitation spectrum you have and so on. Okay, fine. I like it actually. Okay. What else?
I would say still again. So for me, the two main questions in this field: do these you know models where one only takes into account nearest neighbor, you know, orbital interaction, have any relevance whatsoever? And then the second one: do orbitals you know show quantum fluctuations?
Yeah, quantum fluctuations for me it's actually the same problem. But as to the first one, okay, I can also write it down. Why not? But nearest neighbors weather versus long range interaction.
breaking down these artificial symmetries.
What can I say about this one? In principle, it's often possible to describe resulting states using simple treatment of long-range interaction. That's what we did recently, elasticity theory, in fact. I put, say, one distorted atom in one place, take a piece of crystal, put distorted side like this here, elongated simply. It induces certain strain field, and another field here, for instance, would prefer to orient parallel, or maybe prefer to orient perpendicular, and so on. Pure classical elasticity theory. And that works fine, actually, in very many quite a lot of cases. On the other hand, actually, also nearest neighbor models, if you forget about these things, very often also give you correct ground state and correct coupling with spin and orbit, with spins, degrees of freedom, and so on. So I don't really know. It's indeed an open question.
But these long range things must break down.
Yeah, especially if there is some frustration in nearest neighbor, yeah, so then those will be probably.
Well, they'll generate like second neighbor. I mean, all interactions will be generated. I mean, maybe the effects will be weak. Mm-hmm. And I hope that that is the case, but I don't see.
So if you discuss the orbitals, what a question about multiplets and solids?
Well, it is relevant, but I would say that it's in a sense it's actually a separate problem. I would like to put it here actually. It's separate, maybe it's no less important, so on. But I would say that maybe you just lead discussion about multiplet next time. Fine with me. And I actually, when I just thought about this list, I saw that okay, fine as to. This orbital frustration, that's Jeroen probably can say something, and he did. Rule of geometry, that's maybe not so much as done. Relative importance of electron lattice and electron, that's probably best structure people. Say, direct DD versus oxygen and geometry, that I think Matome-san can say something, because it's actually all these spinels are like that. So there are actually quite a lot of people here who can really say much more than I can, particular subject, particular topics. That's what I in fact planned, but I'm sorry.
There could be things like, I hesitate to add to your list.
Well, there's 211, so you can add 12.
Something like Berry phase effects of orbitals on electrons. And a lot of interest in that kind of thing, work of spins, the anomalous Hall effect, the spin texture.
Well, Berry phase effect, I simply, I can't tell you anything about that myself, really, and
that's
I didn't work on
question.
That. Someone maybe in chemistry department or someone working in local Yantelia problems might be.
I mean in the solid state sense. I mean.
No, but first of all, we have to understand it on the level of isolated ions.
No, it's not.
No, no, yeah, that you don't know. Okay.
That's easy, because your interaction is, if you write, this cupping in terms of this T3T2, yeah, it's just, Q times T, yeah? Q1, Q2 times T2 plus Q3 times T3. Yeah. So it's, so if you consider Q,
like magnetic field,
and T as a spin one half, yeah, so there you go. Yeah. So
I was thinking something level, different. No, so I was thinking about electrons. Yeah. You know, thinking about if you had some orbitally ordered state, which could have a texture in it, how it couples to the conduction electrons.
The doping of this orbital state.
Well, you refer to a discrete symmetry. Is the what a texture you mean the domain wall then?
Yeah, it could be something. I mean, it doesn't.
Maybe on some scale.
Yeah.
You mean like something like anomalous Hall effect?
Yeah, exactly. You can get anomalous Hall effect from. In many cases, spin was one picture, right? From a non-collinear spin texture. Why not something like that?
It's a good point to think about, but I do not know if anything is done at all. Maybe nothing.
No, I don't know of anything.
I really don't know. I only heard these talks about Berry phase in relation to isolated sites. Remember, we had this in Groningen, there was this guy who once made this talk and so on. But as to this.
That was Nicola Manini, I think.
Local guys in Groningen, he simply just, when he explained geometric phases, he just used this as an example. to start with. Just forgot who was it. But okay, in any case. But I don't know what Manini did. I simply didn't look at it. I am sorry. Do you know what Nicola did? Manini.
But I don't think that there are metals with orbital degeneracy.
No, no, no. Maybe not metals. Start with insulators, but simply dope it slightly. Dope it slightly and see what happens. That's a very, very interesting question indeed, yeah. Metals, real metals, no, they don't have orbital degeneracy. That's actually another. I can add another point.
Trivial orbital liquid.
What happens?
What's a trivial orbital?
Orbital Fermi liquid.
And metal? Metal.
Orbital gas. With orbital ordering, going to metal, so to say.
That,
that was more or less a point of Igor Mazin talk in our conference, but maybe there is something else. Something
this is on the other side.
The crossover to itinerant states. How does it disappear?
The transition itself, I think we should say, we never discuss. Yeah.
Yeah, how does the orbital ordering disappear when you go to itinerant state?
Sounds like a good time for us to make
Probably we have to wrap up.
Everyone, thank each other. Yeah.
So what? Do we continue?